You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today I have Scott Burgess, the CEO and founder of Continue. Hey Scott.
Hey Brendan, great to be here.
Great to be here. We got to know each other a little bit over the past 6 months or so. We're both in Pavilion together and doing some other stuff with each other, so that's cool. But glad to have you on. Why don't you share who you are, what Continue does, and tell us all about it.
Yeah, it's great to be here. So as you said, Scott Burgess, I'm the founder and CEO of Continue. We are a modern learning management system. So essentially what that means is that we help companies to train their employees and customers, and we produce software that helps them to be really efficient on all ends of that, whether that's tracking training, automating the whole process. So we've been at this for the last just over 10 years now. So it's been a long journey for us, but it's been a lot of fun.
So typical customers that you work with, like what's your demographic?
Yeah, we work with customers. Really, we're kind of industry agnostic. What that means is we work with pretty much any industry, but our main focus is companies that are typically over 1,000 employees, or maybe have over 1,000 end users that they're looking to train. We work with companies that are around the globe, so they could be here in the US or anywhere in the world. Most of the companies we work with are in different industries, from technology to hospitality, healthcare. So we help them with, as I mentioned, training their customers, but also their internal employees, sometimes on the same instance of Continue. So it's a really great, interesting field. There's always different challenges to be had, and a lot of complex issues that people are facing, especially now that people are working remotely. We've been seeing just so many different use cases for the platform and how folks can use us to train or deploy training at scale.
So what do you think makes you guys different and special from the other LMSs?
Yeah, so one thing that we really focused on when we first started Continue, one thing that I really realized is there was a huge gap in the market, that there are a lot of different point systems or point solutions. And what I realized is that learning doesn't just happen in one department, and it needs to happen across the whole organization. So with Continue, what we do really well is we centralize all content, all information, all training into one place. So it's really, when we work with a company, we work through the whole organization. And then as I mentioned, to their customers in some cases as well. What that allows for is it allows for just greater tracking of their data. It allows them to have just better insights, allows them to share content throughout different departments, almost crowdsourcing information through the company. So you have a lot of thought leadership, a lot of information from that tribal knowledge that you capture through the company. And because it goes through the whole organization, it's able to be a lot more robust, easily accessible, just easy to get to the right people at the right time. So that's something that we do very well, is we consider ourselves a blended learning platform, which means that we don't just do online training. We also help with anything that's in person or any types of virtual training. So that could be over Zoom or any type of virtual platform. We facilitate all that within our system, and that makes it sort of a one-stop shop or a single source of truth, if you will, for all types of learning.
And your philosophy around this is very similar to my philosophy with why I wanted to create Place, where in the focus around financial information, where, you know, it's never made a lot of sense to me that financial information is locked away where no one else can see it and understand it. I'd rather have, you know, there's some stuff that's sensitive, of course. I don't want everyone to see what everyone else is getting paid and things like that. But sure, I want salespeople to know what's the relationship with an account. And I want customer success people to know, you know, where is that account's health at? And just sharing or democratizing financial information across the organization is so important to me, because I think it helps. And it sounds like you're doing the same thing with learning and training.
Exactly. It's so important. I think we realized very early on that that word democratized is the perfect word for it, because it's so important that training and learning happens through the whole organization, or happens through, happens for multiple people, different things to share. So what we realized is that our vision was always that companies would use a single source of truth for their learning. And we've seen that, especially during the pandemic. We saw a lot of companies switch to remote or hybrid work. Folks are still very hybrid. We as a company have always been remote. So we've always been embracing of that methodology of remote training. And so we really realized early on that that was going to be the way forward in this sort of hybrid world. And it's been definitely in the last few years, and in especially, has been a lot more uptick of folks trying to train people more efficiently. Obviously, it costs a lot of money to travel to different offices and locations to train people, and onboarding is very expensive and time consuming. So having it in one single source of truth, just as you mentioned with the example of place, is really, really key.
Yeah, I mean, the whole concept, because when I was earlier in my career, obviously everyone came to the office and you sat next to someone, you got to see how they did it and all of that. So the pandemic and the everyone forced to work remote. And even now, as we're still getting through, you know, a lot of people are staying remote. My companies are all fully remote. I like fully remote. But then there's also the hybrid model, which I think is the larger the company, I think it works as well. But, you know, the true need of, like, the example of hiring a salesperson. If you hire a junior level salesperson who's never really done it before, and they're remote and they're working out of their house and they're not sitting and listening to other people and understanding, like, that's a really tall task. So systems like yours are so very needed, especially in today's workplace. It's just crazy.
For sure, for sure. And everyone learns differently as well. I think that's the thing that people sort of forget. You know, some folks really do like to be, you know, over a Zoom or over an in-person session. Some folks just like to read or listen. So having a platform that can do all of the above allows people to learn in the way that they learn best. And then really can track that, have that engagement. I think a big thing for us was learning always felt like a chore. You know, if you think about learning, it always feels like going to the DMV and taking one of those assessments. That's the learning that we all sort of used to. And so I think for us, we really realized, how can we make something that felt a lot more like a consumer product versus a really clunky system that a lot of the other LMSs sort of feel a bit like. And so for us, we really wanted it to be an informal learning platform. That's where we started. And then we really grew into more of the other aspects of training and became more of a robust system for all types of learning. So that is something that we've really seen a lot of, you know, especially as people have been going to that hybrid remote work. The engagement of our platform has been just through the roof, which is great for us, but also great for our customers as well.
Nice. Well, doing this for 10 years, I would imagine you've seen your fair shares of struggles and challenges and setbacks and accomplishments as well. Let's get into some of those. Like, what's been the story for some of those things for you?
Yeah. I mean, definitely, you know the drill. It's definitely a roller coaster ride building any company, right?
Especially right now.
No matter how long you've been doing. Yeah, especially right now. And so I think for us, one thing that was really kind of unique about Continue, and it's almost a pretty unique part about our story, is that we had paying customers before we had product, which is a bit of an interesting dilemma, because, you know, it sounds like a dream at first. You're like, well, people want to pay for something that doesn't exist yet. But at the same time, it's a lot of challenges that come with that. So just to sort of backtrack a little bit on the story, we had pitched the idea of Continue. We realized that learning needs to be centralized and through the whole company and blended, all of those things that I mentioned. And we pitched this to a few folks that were in the HR and learning industry, and some of them were saying, look, nothing like this really exists. Could we prepay for this? And so we were very lucky to have those early customers that sort of backed the idea of what Continue became. And there's a dilemma there of, what do we build first? You know, what do we need to build to be efficient? What's the minimum viable product, if you will? And so we were very lucky in that we had customers that would give us feedback early on. We had a lot of understanding of their pain points, and there were a lot of pains. So we had to really try and understand, you know, what do we build first? What do how do we start building something that's really going to solve these problems? And so for us, the biggest challenge was we bootstrapped the company for about 8 years before we raised any capital. And it was a decision that we made consciously. It wasn't something that we we could have gone out and raised. We did also talk to a number of investors. At the time, a lot of them had said to us, well, we want you to be more of a point solution. And our vision was always to be the opposite of that. So we decided, look, it's probably best to just keep going on our own. We had some really great early customers, a lot of them in the sort of tech industry. And I was living in San Francisco at the time and worked with a lot of folks out there that really gave us a lot of great feedback and shared a lot of their pain points. And so that's something that really shaped the company and something that I'm really, you know, looking back at it now, we're really proud that we did that because we were able to be very customer focused and build something that really solved problems versus just building for what we thought, you know, in a closed room, what we thought people might want. And so we were able to really understand how learning happened within companies that, like I said, different people learn differently. There's the in-person nature of learning that's not ever going to go away, but we wanted to be able to facilitate that and be able to track that within our platform as well and make sure that that was accessible to folks and make sure that we're capturing that learning and retraining and constantly putting out new content and information to people as it evolves. So that was definitely one of our biggest challenges in the early days was we decided to bootstrap. We were revenue backed by customers. We were profitable for many years as well, which was, I think, a really great thing to be. It took a lot of the pressure.
Great and unheard of in the SaaS world.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of folks were, you know, even when we talked to investors at the time, I think one of their challenges with us were, why are you profitable? Why aren't you burning more to move faster? And I think for us, we were always trying to be efficient and try to build something that would be long lasting because we wanted to be there for our customers for a very long time. And so looking back at it now, it's definitely kind of funny because I think everyone now is going towards profitability or trying to get towards profitability and be more efficient. So I think a lot of those early lessons about bootstrapping really did help us to form the company that we had today, form the culture that we had. As I mentioned, we were also remote. So really in 2012, 2013, when remote wasn't really as cool as it is today, we were a remote first company. And so that it was an opportunity because it allowed us to hire great people across the country or across the globe. And it also allowed us to move quickly on certain things. Different time zones can have a lot of benefits, you know, having people on the East Coast that were building and then people on the West Coast that were testing and having a very iterative building process was great for us. But it also had challenges in that, you know, communication breakdowns, you have to learn how to sometimes over communicate. So we did in the early days really try to understand how to build a remote team before it was really as popular as it is today. And we, you know, this is before Slack and before some of the tools that really existed. And so we really had to navigate that as a team to figure that out. And I think a lot of that also is what formed the early parts of our product around collaboration, around how we can build content and author content together in our platform. So a lot of those tools that we built almost for ourselves and for our customers at the time became things that are just the norm today in terms of how people train and learn. So definitely a lot of challenges with it. We've been through ups and downs, but also a lot of really great opportunities that we've had and just great outcomes. We work with some amazing companies, as I mentioned, across so many different industries. And so I think for us as well, it's been just a really unique story. We've been able to forge a really great culture. We've been able to stay really lean, but still grow and build something that's very scalable. I think that's the beauty of software is you can build something that just scales infinitely.
Yeah, what you've done is really hard to do. I mean, I was talking with someone literally yesterday about there is no right or wrong answer as to how you're building your company, right? It's all strategy. It's even like the art of business is really the strategy you're going to execute to solve some problem. Your strategy is going to be different from someone else's. And, you know, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with the companies that went out and raised a big round and try to grow aggressively and all of that. And that's never been my bag. I've never done that. I've always raised smaller rounds as we've needed. And, you know, now I'm on three companies right now. And Talent Rover was my first. And all of them have different funding journeys. And one of my companies, Blueprint, we are bootstrapped and we've been profitable and I love running that company that way. It's also not a software company and software companies inherently are really expensive to get going.
And, you know, I've brought in Venture before, I'm Venture right now. I love our VC firm, Geekdom Fund. They're investors in both Place and Assemble. And then I've also worked with a lot of angel investors and got to see the benefits and the challenges of all sides of it. And I'll tell you, bootstrapping is really hard. And I've never done it in software. Like, we're trying to do it at Assemble with just keeping the funding round as small as possible. What are some tips or tricks or things that you learned from doing it for, what you said, 8 years before you raised institutional? Mm-hmm. How did you guys pull that off?
Yeah, I think we were lucky. I won't sugarcoat it and say that, you know, we did everything right. We definitely got lucky in the early days, just having those initial customers before we even had products. So we were very lucky to have the core people that we could work with and work closely with and understand the problem, so we could solve it for others. I think for us also, just going really deep on the problem. Looking at what are the problems that our customers have, what are the shared problems that they have, where's the overlap, how do we build for that, how do we make sure that we're really looking at what their problems might be in the future as well. And I think that methodology or way that we went about building is still in our DNA today. We stayed really efficient and lean. We didn't overspend on firstly, we couldn't overspend on hiring at the time. So we had a very lean team. As I mentioned, we were remote, so that did keep costs lower to be more of a remote team, didn't have a big infrastructure that we were spending a lot of money on. And then, you know, keeping things just really efficient. So looking at how we could automate certain areas of the business, looking at how we could, you know, bring in the tools to make us more efficient, to fill gaps that we had. But always just looking at our runway and how can we continuously bring on more customers and bring on more revenue. I think that was part of the challenge. Looking back at it, it's always easy to say, you know, it was easy to do that, but it really wasn't. As I mentioned, it's a roller coaster ride, and you know this. And you're absolutely right. There's no wrong or right way to build a company. It doesn't have to be bootstrapped. It doesn't have to be a massive round. It doesn't have to be, it could be either or even somewhere in the middle. So I think for us, we've seen the benefits of both. And I, you know, as we look forward, now we've raised a couple of rounds of funding in 2021 and then 2022. We were also very lucky then. We timed the market pretty well before things went sort of how they are today. So we got pretty lucky around just the timing of things. And I think that is a lot of it with building a company. A lot of it is really luck in timing, working hard with the right types of people and making sure that you just have a really good, compelling vision that people can get it sort of behind. So that was really a lot of what we did in the early days, was just trying to be as efficient as possible, making sure that we weren't overspending. Those constraints can actually be really great in business, though. I think those constraints allow you to be a lot more creative. Those constraints allowed us to figure out problems in a different way. In a way, it served us well. Like, even if I look at the product today, there are things, the decisions that we made in the product that make us very unique. And those came from constraints. It came from us doing things in a way that would serve ourselves and our product and our business. And they've actually played out in a really great way to allow us to be, you know, more scalable, allowed us to be, you know, global faster, allowed us to do a lot of great things. So looking back at it, those constraints, I think, are actually a really beautiful part of a business, because they force you to really be creative or do things that you may not have done if you had, you know, a big war chest of cash in the bank. So yeah, that was totally great for us. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, totally. Even like, I think a lot of companies, or most companies now, are starting to, or have been looking at this lens of, there may not be another funding round anytime soon. And, you know, when you see everything that's going on with Venture, I mean, Venture has dramatically slowed down. So raising capital right now is brutally hard. You've got to have an amazing story and the dots have to all align. And then also the valuation, you've got to be comfortable with getting priced lower than, mm-hmm. you know, where you'd have been 6 months ago. What I'm hearing is Q3 is really when some ventures should start to loosen up again, just because these firms have been sitting on capital for so long that they've got to deploy capital. They just can't yep. continue to sit on it. So it'll be interesting to see how the end of the year wraps up. What was the the transition of going from bootstrapping to I've raised a round, because I, you know, I think in my experience, it's paying attention to cash flow is always critical, regardless of what, how you're raising it, but it's really two different strategies, right? So like you go out and raise a decent size round for the VC, typically that round is supposed to be spent to get you to the next round, which should be a bigger return for everyone, and people can take money off the table and you continue that that cycle. Whereas if you're bootstrapping, or if you're just raising primarily from angels, those people don't particularly, there's not another round coming. Like that's not the goal. The goal is to grow the business and run a healthy, sustainable business. And switching those things can sometimes be challenging, especially depending on how aggressive your new institutional investors are with, you need to grow X and get us a return. What was that transition like for you of going from bootstrap to, okay, we're going to raise rounds and this is where we're going to go?
Yeah, I think for us, it was evident that we needed to raise to really take it to the next level. So for us, we really look for the right partners. I think that's really what it comes down to. It's working with the right partner. It's working with the right firm or firms that understand where you want to take it. And for us, I think the efficiency piece of the business was something that we didn't want to lose. We didn't want to say, hey, we're going to raise money and just go and blow a bunch of, you know, burn a bunch of capital. We really wanted to go in and repeat. You know, I talk a lot about repeatability, not scalability, because I think it's really important for founders to look at how we can repeat certain motions and make sure that they're really efficient before we look at scaling it. You know, a lot of people just want to throw headcount at a problem or money at a problem, and before you know it, you've run out of money and runway. So for us, we really looked at the right partners. When we raised our seed round in 2021, we actually didn't need the capital. We had a good you know, chunk of capital, and we didn't really even spend that through 2021. We hired more. We deployed capital. It gave us a little bit more comfort in a way that we had that capital on hand to deploy if we needed to. But we actually didn't really touch any of it. So when we raised our Series A, it was really, again, a similar scenario where we wanted to bring in the right partners that can help us go the distance and go the next step in the journey. And so we raised our Series A, as I mentioned, sort of closed at the beginning of 2022, just before all of the turbulence that we've been seeing. And so it was a different year. We definitely hired more in 2022 and really deployed more capital. But I think at that point, we knew why we were deploying it. We knew what we were deploying it for. We knew what would be repeatable and how we can continue to grow the business. And so I think it really comes down to, for us, it came down to we didn't want to just do it alone. We wanted to bring on the right partners. We wanted to bring on, you know, capital was one piece of the puzzle for us. It was great to be able to have that to, again, have the confidence to go after it in a bigger way. But it was also about how can we bring in the right expertise. You know, we brought in, with our seed stage, we brought in a number of, it was institutional, as well as we brought in some angels, and they've been great, you know, mentors, advisors, assistant to building the business. And so it's been good to have those types of people in the company that are operators that have done this before. Some of them, you know, have gone public and done the whole journey. And so it's good to have those folks that can help you look around corners or just give you advice on things that you may not know today. So that was really our motivation for raising, but it was different. It was, you know, I think we've spoken about this, and especially that's where Place came in for us as well, was we needed to mature a lot of things and make sure that we were constantly, like you said, centralizing everything into one place, making sure we had the right metrics and data and all of the things that we needed to be successful. And so we definitely had to mature a lot. And I think it's been a great move for the business. We've been able to just become a lot more efficient with the way that we're looking at capital, the way that we're looking at our hiring plans, the way that we're looking at purchasing tools or whatever it might be through for the company. And so it's been a shift, but I think the benefit for us is we've already done the bootstrap thing. So we know what that model looks like. And so we sort of look at it as more of a hybrid. It's not just, let's just burn a lot of cash. It's more about how can we be more efficient with the capital and help that take us to the long haul on the journey. It's also allowed us to explore different technologies and explore different areas of the business that we may not have been able to do if we were bootstrapping.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you guys are still staying true to your roots with trying to automate what you can. I mean, that was a big discussion when we were talking about can Place help your business and automating the whole flow of data for really your sales to cash type process. And you guys were already doing so many great things, but we were able to help remove some of the separate or the duplicate things you were doing and streamline and automate it. And it's been fun to see your team's approach on it, because it does so align with how we think about it as well. So that's been great. And, you know, staying true to those roots, like I always talk about Salesforce, and they had a earnings call, not the last one, but I think it was the one before it, where they finally started talking about profitability, and Salesforce has never talked about profitability before. But they referenced going back to their roots of, you know, launching in, I think they launched in 99. So they've gone through huge economic changes and been really successful from it. So I think that foundation is really the key, because you can always open the floodgate. It's very, very difficult to stop spending money once you're spending money. But if you have that foundation, you know, you can do it.
Exactly.
What do you think, you know, I love this question to ask everyone. What do you think other founders or execs, like, what should people be thinking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about, I probably used the word efficiency 100 times in this conversation. So I think efficiency is a big part of our ethos here at Continue. I think, you know, we're seeing that in the market right now where it may be a little bit more difficult to get capital. And yeah, I'm sure that's going to open up in Q3, Q4 of this year, which is great. But I think hopefully. But it's definitely important that we look at, you know, how can we be, whether it's automating, whether it's looking at being really conscious about our headcount, being really conscious about where we deploy capital. I think that's what everyone is looking at right now. Obviously, as a learning company, I would say that looking at how you can grow from within is really key. That's something that's really set us up for success here at Continue, is that, you know, we have this value, which is always learning. And we really embrace that. We try and look at how we can encourage folks within the company to grow within their roles or even into other roles. And so I think that's an opportunity for us to look at, if we're not going to be bringing in a lot more headcount and we're trying to do a lot more with less this year, then we need to look at how we can develop our employees and develop our teams and make sure that they can really go that journey with us. And so we're seeing this across a lot of our customers today, is that they're really looking at doubling down on their existing team members and helping them to be more successful within their roles, or giving them opportunities to grow within the organization, which we should all be doing anyway. That's really the purpose of building and growing a business. But we need to be looking at that a lot more through a focused lens. So that would really be the areas that I'm seeing, at least from our customers, where we're seeing a lot of focus. And obviously just enjoy the journey as well. It's been, as we've talked about, it's ups and downs, but it's going to level out at some point here. And I think, you know, we've seen it in 2008, we've seen it in other times throughout the last, you know, 10, 11 years of our journey. We've seen the ups and downs in the economy, and it's really about how can you go the distance. And I think being really efficient, being really mindful on how you're building is really key.
Yeah. I mean, it's all cyclical, and, you know, to your point about digging in and enhancing and improving your existing team, you know, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to retain someone than it is to go out and recruit and bring them up to speed on everything that's going on, not just from the actual cost, but the timing of how long does it take someone to really understand the culture and your customers, your product, all of those different types of things. I think the other piece that comes to mind for me is like the investment that you're making on your team with training and educating and helping develop them. This is cyclical. So when everything starts to really go again, having a super well-trained team, when you have the time to train them right now, is just going to set you up for immense success as things get rocking and rolling again. So
exactly. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Well, we're out of time. I told you it was going to go fast, and it did. So I thank you for coming on. I think there's a lot to take away from this. I don't think I've had another guest really talk about learning, but it is such an important piece, especially right now.
For sure. Well, thanks for having me, Brendan.
All right, everyone else. Scott, thank you again. Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday, so please subscribe, and we'll see you next week.